this was my identity.
Nobody talks about how freaking hard it is to be a dentist. What most people talk about is how this affects the patient. What nobody talks about is how this affects us. Dentistry is ready for this. Now is really the time. Welcome back to Wellness in Dentistry. I am one of your hosts, Dr. Kyle Stanley. I'm a dentist, a tech founder, a speaker, and a researcher. And I'm joined with my very good friend and your other co-host, Dr. Martin Mendelson. He is a disabled dentist, a coach, a speaker, and a thought leader. And together, Martin and I have helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness in dentistry. And today's going to be an interesting topic. You know, we don't talk too clinical on this podcast, really because every other dental podcast talks about clinical dentistry. And we are here to talk about wellness from a patient standpoint, a practitioner standpoint, and also a practice standpoint. But today, expect to learn how communicating with your lab technician and having your lab technician as a true partner in your practice can actually reduce stress in your practice and make you happier. Now, before we get into that, in a few months, we've got our signature course, which is a two-day live workshop with me and Martin both. It's called Lightside Live. And this is our transformational course where we bring dental professionals through wellness and dentistry. You're going to learn everything from my background, everything from Martin's background. We're going to talk about the study of happiness. We're going to talk about priorities in life. It really is some of our favorite days that we speak, and Martin and I speak a lot. So if you're interested in that, make sure to go to wellnessanddentistry.com, go to links, and sign up before it sells out. So Martin, another interesting thing about you and I both is that we have worked at dental labs.
Yes.
Dentists working at dental labs. So we have this very nuanced experience with both being a dentist, and many dentists like to blame the labs for everything. Mm-hmm. And then also being inside of a lab, and labs like to blame dentists for things too. You and I feel like we have a very unbiased opinion.
Yeah, I usually call it unbiased, but a bit jaded because of those experiences. And I really do believe that it would benefit dentistry if this were ever to be possible. Logistically, it isn't. But if every restorative dentist could spend time in a laboratory, I think it would really change the face of their practice. My good friend Bjorn Melander, Dr. Melander, is also my general dentist. His parents owned a lab, and he grew up, you know, pouring models and all that kind of good stuff. And he's an extraordinary clinician. And I believe because it's his upbringing and seeing both sides. And so talk about predictability, my goodness, we'll certainly get into that. But engaging with your laboratory technician as a partner, as a practice partner, can change the face of your practice and your clinical work.
Yeah, I had a different experience than I think most people did from the beginning, in that, you know, my first mentor once I was in dental school was Pascal Monnier. I'm sure a lot of people know who he is. His brother, Michel Monnier, is one of the best laboratory technicians in the world. So from the very beginning, being mentored by Pascal, he really ground that idea into us that the technician is your equal.
Yep.
You need them. They need you. You can't do anything with them. They can't do anything with you. We need to include them early. We need to respect them. We need to sometimes have the patient meet the technician. So for me, that was very much what I learned from the beginning. And I never had to relearn that. However, you and I were talking before we started recording, and we know that that's not always the case.
No. And in fact, I was sharing with you the story years ago when I was working for Vita, and I was asked by Dr. Marcus Blatz to speak to some of the rising D4 students, and actually some of the PROS residents, about color, science, shade communication, and lab communication. I'll never forget, and I've reminded of him of this since, that he basically got up there and said, you know, Martin's a great guy. He's got a lot of great stuff, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, you all need to understand that you have to view your laboratory technician as a partner, because they are so critical, and you will, quote, fail in practice if you don't. He used the F word, the non bad one. And I was so happy to hear somebody of that caliber be that staunch about the need for the relationship. And, you know, laboratory technicians are wonderful people. They have great organizations, you know, great meetings like the LMT meetings. And they're just, you know, you're missing out if you're not engaging with them as true partners.
Yeah. And so let's talk about what the typical quote unquote dentist does. Okay. Yeah. And let's just use veneers. Most people have a patient in, they treat and plan, they say, we're going to do 6 veneers. Mm-hmm. They prep the teeth, then they take an impression, maybe they make provisional somehow based on the previous teeth or something. They send the impression to the laboratory technician and say, make it look good. Mm-hmm. And then when the lab sends it back, mm-hmm. and let's say the midline's off, the bite is weird, something is off, then we say, oh my gosh, what the heck?
Yeah.
Now, there's so many problems with that. Mm-hmm. And what I was really big on many years ago, speaking mostly about implant dentistry and smile design, was let's talk about implant dentistry now, okay? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is I'm here as an implant dentist not to place an implant. I am here to give the patient a tooth.
Yeah.
Now, I can't place the implant in the correct position unless I know where the tooth is.
Yeah.
So before the digital world, we were taking an impression, sending it to the lab. The lab would whack something up. I would be able to then incorporate that into the planning. I was doing it all guided. So I knew where the implant was going so that I could have a screw retained crown. I could have the proper thickness of material. Because what happens many times, and I feel so bad for the lab sometimes, is they get blamed because there are material limiters. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, going back to the veneer example, let's say you have a dark stump and you don't prep enough to yep. allow for whatever material you want to block that dark stump.
Yep.
Now, had you had a conversation with your laboratory, the laboratory could have said, hey, so I know you said that central incisor has a dark stump. If you want to use feldspathic porcelain or if you want to use Emax, I need to have 0.7. And you're thinking, well, I usually do 0.5. I don't want to reduce more tooth structure if I don't have to. And they said, well, from an aesthetic standpoint, if you want to go from that dark stump to an OM1, to block that, we need a certain thickness. And so bringing it back to how you and I talk about predictability, consistency, communication, and how that reduces stress, just by including your laboratory technician before you prep or before you place the implant, you're going to reduce stress.
Absolutely. And just taking the time to plan. And so let's use your veneer example, because we both, you know, you're giving me flashbacks, my friend, of being on the phone calling up docs and saying, look, we're not going to be able to do this. We don't have enough production because of the dark shade, et cetera. But let's take a step back. We do the diagnostic wax up. We get the approval from the patient. We get the, you know, the prep guides. And so, you know, we have, you know, all this stuff that we have in front of us to create and instill predictability, which then therefore just reduces stress. Because ironically enough, so many dentists stress about the insert appointment, when for many, they've reduced that stress dramatically on the majority of their cases because of the predictability that they instill, because they're using their technician as a partner. They're planning, they're doing their diagnostic wax ups, they're getting the matrices, they're reducing adequately, they're allowing the patients to function in the provisionals to know that aesthetically they're okay, functionally they're okay. All these things help you sleep at night, which last time I checked is good for you. So why would we not do that?
And as you're saying that, I'm thinking about decision fatigue.
Yeah.
There's been reports that the average adult now makes 35,000 decisions. And communicating with your lab early is not going to reduce your decisions.
No.
But it's going to reduce your decisions in the chair.
Correct.
When the patient is numb, when you're in that expensive time in your chair, in the US, it's $440 per hour per chair, by the way. So if you're deciding, ooh, how much should I prep here? That's more decisions that are happening while you're in a stressful situation. So make those decisions when you're doing in an admin day when it's after patients or maybe team your team has left.
Yeah.
When you make decisions in a less stressful environment, I found that that really helped me. So when I was going in to place the implant, prep the veneers, all I had to do was execute.
Correct.
I had already made all the decisions.
Correct. Correct. I'm envisioning sitting there real time. You believe you've gotten where you need to get from a reduction perspective. You've done your depth cuts. You've reduced the rest of the tooth structure. All you got to do, yes, I'm simplifying it. All you got to do is pick up that silicone matrix, pop it on, and immediately you know, oh, shoot, in the mid third, I need to take away a little bit more. Very common area of under reduction.
Totally.
You're done. You know that when you send it to the laboratory, it's going to be good enough or reduced enough. And again, reduces stress, reduces cortisol, helps you sleep better. This is a practice and personal wellness discussion. And I can't wait to get into the practicalities of this in a minute, but it's just, for whatever reason, I think it's something so many of our colleagues just overlook, frankly.
Yeah. And I've seen it on the implant side too. Like, let's say you're talking about full arch. Mm-hmm. And many times at the lab that I work at, Paramount Dental Studio, we will get full arch cases sent to us, implants already planned. And we do, let's say they have a provisional on, they like where the bite is.
Mm-hmm.
Say, I want X material.
Yeah.
However, based on where the implants are placed, on the components for that implant,
yep.
on the bite, there's not enough restorative space.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so this goes back to, we should place the implants in a position that allows for the restoration to be the correct depth or thickness or aesthetic function. And that all goes back to the beginning. And it also goes back to what we talked about a few episodes ago. Let me see what episode that was. Episode 20, which is the stress of referrals in dentistry.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you're working in a referral-based system, let's say you're not placing the implants, you still want to be the quarterback on that, if you're a GP, to have the technician involved early before the specialist places the implant, because that may limit your restorative space and your restorative options.
Yeah.
So if you're used to using a specific material or a specific design, it may not be possible.
Correct.
And, you know, the lab technicians know this stuff better than us.
And so, like the referring episode that we did, we can't forget to take advantage of the number of cases that they see on a regular basis. This is very analogous, laboratory technician as well as specialist. And so, how about we get into some of the practicalities here about how you can do this, right? So, if you think about it, meeting with your, or let me back up, many labs have preferences on file relative to things you like, things you don't like from a restorative perspective. While at the same time, having a twice a year meeting, once a quarter meeting, depending on how much comprehensive type of cases you're executing, makes a lot of sense. What would you talk about? How are things going? Take a look at, you know, how you are sending cases into the laboratory. Talk about how the laboratory is sending cases back. What do we like? Where do we feel we can improve? What specific instances did things go really well? What specific instances did things not go well? And then once we talk about all that stuff in a psychologically safe manner, meaning we can do so openly and transparency without fear of judgment or reprisal, then we can turn to, as the clinician, taking advantage of the depth and breadth of the cases the technician sees, ask him or her, so tell me about some other best practices of my colleagues that we could incorporate in our relationship. Like, holy smokes, because they see all this stuff. We don't. We only see our work or maybe our practice partner's work, and that's it. So why not take advantage of their eyes, so to speak, to help you increase your laboratory cases, your predictability, and your clinical outcomes?
That is so powerful. And let me give you an example of that. One of the things that I know you made, how many, 6,000 phone calls or something? 16,000 phone calls to doctors over the years.
Yeah,
yes, I counted. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Get a little checkbox like you're in prison or something, right?
So fun story. My husband, Michael, made me a rudimentary software program called Dental Log. And so it was, who did I call? What was I calling about? What was the resolution? And then it would able to filter so I could actually help these colleagues and say, you know, of the last X number of cases of this type, we've had this certain challenge. What do you say we talk about, blah, blah, blah. It was a game changer. But yes, I counted.
So one of the things that I'm on the phone with dentists talking about now is margins.
Mm. Okay?
So single crowns, people taking digital impressions with scanners now,
yep.
And they get something back from the lab and there's an open margin, there's a short margin, there's an overhang, something is wrong with the margin, right? And they many times, again, this is going back to what you were just talking about, mm-hmm. how they only see their own stuff. They will say, well, I looked at the scan and I could see the margin around. And I usually say, did you scan in black and white or did you scan in color?
Mm.
And most of them say, well, I scan in color. I mean, that's why we have the color one. You know, so I can see where the tooth is and I can see where it stops. And I said, try scanning in grayscale and see what you see.
Yeah.
And then what I say is, if you can't see the margin, our technicians can't see the margin.
Yeah.
And I'll zoom in, I'll show where there's tissue over the margin. They go, oh my gosh, I have no idea about that. And then many times what I'll do is bring up one of the best doctors that we have, who is incredible at tissue retraction, incredible clean preps, show his preps and say, you know, here's an example of a doctor that has very little remakes, because I'm bringing it back to the remake problem. Remake's terrible for everybody. It's terrible for the lab. It's terrible for the patient. It's terrible for the doctor, right? Nobody wants that.
Nope.
And when they see the difference between their retraction and this doctor's retraction, they go, oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
some of this has to do with the misunderstanding of digital technology. I've had many doctors tell me that, well, I didn't think I need to use cord if I have a scanner. And which blows my mind, right?
Sure.
But
yeah, yeah.
Some rep told them that, some colleague told them that.
Yeah.
And as you know, with the lab, we guess 75% right when we guess the margin, because we see thousands and thousands of cases. So there's a little bit of, they get positive feedback by doing bad things when the lab guesses correctly.
Yeah.
And so going back to utilizing what you were saying, utilizing the lab's collective intelligence, very powerful, because, you know, for me as a consultant for this lab, as the clinical director, I've seen thousands and thousands of cases, way more cases than I saw with my own hands.
Exactly.
Or even including my two partners at my practice. And so it's really allowed me to see what works, what doesn't, and especially look at, because you know labs do this, they will say, let's look at all the remakes and what went wrong. And so remakes in a lab are not a lot. It's usually 2 to 3%. But if you look at those, you can start seeing trends.
Oh, 100%. And what I would say to you is, yes, globally, it's usually 2 to 3%. But per client, it can vary dramatically, right?
That's right, yeah.
And you know, and that goes for, you know, case acceptance on the referral side too, like we talked about. It's like, what lessons can you learn from your specialist with their, you just taught me something, collective intelligence of all the other referred cases that comes in. Yeah, I love that. Relative to what can I do differently? What can I say differently? How can I refer differently to bring my case acceptance up to these other individuals? One thing I did want to note too, for any lab technicians that might be listening here, one of the wonderful communication lessons that I learned from Richard Harrell, who I worked for at America's Dental Labs, which is now DSG Clearwater, or NDX Clearwater, I guess, is always speak from our perspective. So when I'm calling a restorative dentist, it's not your prep, it's my dye. Or my scan, or my clearance, not your bite registration. So it's a very small nuance, but son of a gun, Richard is a brilliant man. And that subtle nuance of communicating that it's something of mine that I'm concerned about, rather than saying your XYZ doesn't point a finger and allows the other party to have more open ears, if you will. It's just a little, I'll call it trick, but it's not a trick. It's a communication tool.
Well, this goes back to our episode 22, engaging with other dental colleagues, curiosity versus judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And in that episode, I think I talked about it, but if I didn't, it is more about looking at facts and removing the person.
Yeah.
So you could say, on this die, I don't have enough space here.
Yep.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
What I would not say is, you didn't reduce
exactly
enough here, right?
Exactly.
And it's similar when you find something, let's say you find a crown that has an open margin from a mm-hmm. previous colleague, right? You don't mm-hmm. know this colleague, and there's caries there. I would say it appears that this crown could be harboring bacteria,
yep.
and there seems to be some decay next to this crown. What I didn't say was, this margin is terrible and this dentist that did it so wrong. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, because I don't know if it was like that when it was placed. I yeah. wasn't in the room when it happened. I don't know if the patient was a total crazy person and jumping all around and they just had to get something done to
yep.
protect the tooth for now. And so I like that you said that. And it's so powerful, so mm-hmm. powerful, because it completely changes the emotion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. And that's what it is, because like you just said, you have no idea what happened in the chair that day. And having the technician call you up and say, we can't move forward with this case, can really create a visceral emotional response and reaction on the part of the dentist. Because look, he or she did the best they could. They were sweating bullets. Their blood pressure was up. And now you're calling me and telling me that I have to deal with this again. Not only was it difficult, but the patient just wasn't even that nice about it. Are you kidding me? And so there's a bit of grace that the technicians have to have too, relative to understanding, you know, we weren't there and we don't know what's going on, which goes back to one of our first points about the importance of actual planning to instill predictability into the case, you know?
I'd like to talk about expectations
yeah.
with lab technicians, because one thing that I've been working on, you know, currently being a consultant for a lab, is helping my doctors with setting expectations for patients.
Mm.
So there was one case recently. It was a single crown. Okay? They sent it to us, digital scan. There was a distal open margin, or sorry, mm-hmm. distal open contact.
Mm-hmm.
We extended the contact a little bit. We sent it to them. Now there's a mesial open contact. Okay. We looked at the two different scans. There was, we think the prep actually moved. So there was, you know, it's an upper maxillary posterior softer bone. Sometimes the teeth can just slightly move. You make the contact too tight, it opens it up. You make contact too loose, the tooth shifts forward. Like there's all these little micro shifts that can happen, mm-hmm. right? And so what we did was we added to that mesial contact. And what I did was tell that doctor, I'm going to send you this crown back. But when you call the patient, make sure you tell them this is going to be a try-in. This has been a complicated case.
I knew you were going to go there.
We're going to try it in. We're going to check it out. Yeah. If it works, if it looks good, you'll leave with mm-hmm. it that day. However, this has been a challenging case, so we may have to take a new impression and send it back to the lab. And I know, you know, I apologize. I know it's been challenging, but about 5% of our cases have some kind of challenge like this.
Yeah.
Now, not only are you preparing the patient for what's going to happen so that when they come in, more than likely you're going to get it right and you're going to be the hero. But when you go into that seat appointment, that mm-hmm. delivery appointment, mm-hmm. I'm using quotes because I don't like either one of those. We call them try-ins at my yep. practice. You are going to be less stressed, because 100%. If it doesn't work out, you say, ah, Mrs. Jones, you know what? It looks like there's still something here. You know, I told you we may have to take a new impression. I think that's best that we do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put your temporary on. And I'll let you know when we get this back from the lab. I really want this to work well. So just give me.
Absolutely. And I love what you just said too. And I want to pull this out because think of the PR this creates. And I'm with you. I dislike seat insert, final appointment. I don't like any of those. So if you set the stage and you say, look, we're sending this to the laboratory or we're fabricating it in our in-house. And the next time you come in, we're gonna go for a try and we want to make sure it looks good, feels good, functions well, et cetera. There's a lot of parameters. We take our work extraordinarily seriously. And there's a small percentage of cases where it just doesn't meet my standards. And therefore, we need to modify ever so slightly in one of those various factors. And I want to make sure that you get the best restoration possible. So then what happens? I mean, think about psychologically what you're setting up. You're setting up an expectation of excellence. And so then, therefore, talk about reduction of stress. It's like, look, you know what? I'm just not happy with this. This doesn't meet my standards. This is what we need to do. And you move forward, and the patient's like, oh, you're such a great dentist.
Yeah, and you just had a quote unquote complication.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
that was one thing that I didn't realize until I was teaching this, was I was teaching it as a way of preparing the patient so that the patient wasn't stressed and pissed off if something didn't work, which impacted me. My stress reduction was more dependent on reducing the stress of the patient. However, once I started teaching this in Lightside Academy, I got a lot of feedback of people saying, me setting the expectation for the patient that I don't have to deliver it that day reduced the stress on me when I walked into the
100%.
chair.
100%.
And I didn't even realize how important that was until it was being used at scale.
You know what you're making me think of too? One of the things that I was taught in one of my very first coaching certifications was the concept of not being attached to the outcome. And so that goes to, just going through life, but it also has to do with even just coaching sessions. And we had this whole thing about not jumping in your client's bag, like baggage. And so it's fascinating because, look, I'm human and so is every other coach out there. And what can happen is sometimes you feel like I'm not connecting with the client or the client isn't getting something out of it or whatever things are going through your brain. And then the next thing you know, the client's like, that was an amazing session. I just, you helped. And so it's just, again, when you can remove yourself from the outcome, it reduces stress. When you are attached to the outcome, it creates stress. And whether that's, restorations, relationships, coaching conversations, human behavior is human behavior. Like we just happen to be dentists, but we're all still human. And
Yeah, it
you
works
gotta
really
remember that.
well in dentistry because so many of us are tied to that outcome.
Well, we've talked about this so many times. I mean, I'll speak for both of us, how proud we are that we have Lightside Live and the in-person courses. Yet by the same token, it's not always the easiest thing to get dentists interested in that kind of learning because we attach value of learning to things we can do between our fingers when the reality is that what goes on between our ears will always come before what we do with our fingers and impacts the totality of our lives. And so it's just a matter of what we mark as important, right? And
And I
so,
think with us being scientists, I think we also like to look at things we can measure. And many times it's challenging to measure mental health or wellness. I mean, yes and no, there are some things, right? But it's very easy to measure how much money did I make? How many patients did I see? How many implants did I place this month? How many referrals did I get? How many new patients did I get? They're very easy, and especially with modern day practice management, it's just run a report. However, if you say, how deep are my relationships? How much has my communication improved? How am I doing with setting expectations? Now, it's possible to measure it, but much more challenging.
Well, and I think the thing that so many of us forget too, and not to get too far off on the tangent because we talk about lab stuff, is that there's all this research out there buoying what happens when we engage in mental health, when we focus on gratitude and positivity and all that kind of stuff. So the science is out there, but to your point, it's the individualistic experience of life that for some doesn't feel as tangible that makes them, you know, potentially shy away. And I'll speak for myself too, you know, in my own journey in mental wellness, a lot of times your growth appears as a retrospective reaction. And what do I mean by that? You come upon a situation that would have previously driven a great deal of stress that you're now able to allow it to roll off your back. And that's when you realize how much growth you've had. And that's so sometimes it could be a so retrospective true. Reality, right? So
That's so true. And I'm trying to think of some recent things that have happened to me. But you and I usually talk about those privately. Yeah. You know, oh, I had this challenging situation. Yeah. Usually I would have been pissed off for a week or a month. And, you know, after a day, I'm feeling pretty good and I'm feeling pretty positive. So you're exactly right in that is how you measure yourself. It's me now versus me a year ago, me now versus me 10 years ago.
Yeah. Which engages the whole success amnesia concept that I talk about a lot of times. It's like we negate all the small steps and small wins because as society, we look to the big things like, you know, the car, the house, the practice, the money in the bank, the title in front of your name or behind your name, you know, those kind of things. But instilling predictability in all elements, including in your laboratory relationships, can help to really not only create that success in your life, but enable you to look back. Because I mean, think about it. Your laboratories, most laboratories, if not all, have all this data, right? And so they can look to what's our remake percentage? How many of these kind of cases have we done? You know, take your pick on the data. They can share that with you. And so you can see your growth through them and their own data as well to help you on your own journey.
Yeah, you know, it's reminding me, coming from a lab side, there was recently a client at the lab that I consult for that was like, we've had so many remakes, okay? And so I talked to the owner. I said, let's look at the data on them. It was crazy. Like, it was like 0.25%, okay?
Yeah.
They sent, they have, I think, three doctors at one practice. So there's a ton of cases coming through. I mean, they do a pretty high volume too. So they were doing hundreds of crowns, let's say, in the last 6 months. And they had like five remakes or something. And it was, when we looked at the data, we were like, you know, I basically had to call the doctor and say, I'm sorry about these remakes. Let's look through some of them and see what we can learn, whether it was our fault, your fault. Mm-hmm. You know, let's see where both of us can improve. But I had to say, you know, our typical remake rate averages around 2%.
Yeah.
You're not even at 0.5%.
Yeah.
So
it's all relative.
It's all relative, you know? And that goes to understanding the lab challenges from their side, which I think many dentists don't look at. So I know dentists that, let's go back to our veneer example, will prep teeth and say 6 units of veneers, you know, canine to canine. That's the instructions, A2, A1.
Yep.
They didn't say the material. They didn't say the shapes. They didn't say how they want the occlusion set. They didn't say if they, I mean, nothing. And then they get it back.
Yep.
And they say, oh my gosh, oh, I don't like this.
Exactly.
And it's, this goes back to talking with patients, talking with team, talking with family, talking with anybody. But letting someone know what the parameters are, setting the expectations, communicating as much as possible. Mm-hmm. I love the lab prescriptions that come through and say, I'd love to have a triangular gingival third, but with the incisal embrasures. I want to keep them a little more open. Patient is, you know, in her 30s, so we can make it look a little younger. We can keep the incisal sharpness of the canines, and or, you know, things like patient wants very natural aesthetics, so they're open to different shapes and little imperfections. I mean, It's like if you tell, like if I tell my, let's say my 7-year-old son, I don't know, I can't think of an example, but like, go get the shovel out of the garage.
Okay.
Or if I say, hey, Valco, I need you to get the silver shovel that has the blue handle. It's to the left of the car by the hockey equipment. There's other shovels up there. It's going to be at the very top. Now, make sure when you get it that you grab it by two hands, you pull it up, you don't hit the car, you walk by. I need you to get me that shovel, right? Think of what would happen if I just said, get the shovel.
Yeah, totally, totally. And so can we talk about an elephant in the room here for a minute, which is there are many who don't want to go to the effort of having a diagnostic wax up fabricated due to cost. And so my challenge to you, to anyone listening, is this. First of all, I want to respect your concern about your margins, not clinical ones, but financial ones. Second of all, however, I want you to take a step back and get real with yourself around the cost of remakes, of modifications,
chair time,
and simply
reputation.
Do the math. Yeah, do the math. Honestly, do the math. Because unless you're right out of school, you should be able to pull some reasonable amount of data. How many cases have we done? You know, how many appointments did those comprise? How many of those cases had to go back to the laboratory? Because you're going to remember the challenging ones, right? I mean, we just do.
Yeah.
And do the math and see what makes more sense to you. I guarantee you, at worst, it's going to be a wash. At worst.
Yeah, well, I talked about this all the time when I'm talking about digital dentistry with guided surgery. Because guided surgery costs have come way down. When I first started talking about them about 15 years ago, they were a lot. I mean, there were surgical guides that were $1,000. People were saying, I can't spend $1,000 on this. Yeah. And even then, when I worked out the math, it made sense.
Yeah.
Because you're building reputation with the patient. You're showing them how you're going above and beyond. You're limiting your liability. You're becoming more predictable. Your actual cost of time in the chair goes down.
Yep.
You're reducing decision fatigue. I mean, so many positives. So now when you can get a surgical guide for, say, $99 or $200, I mean, it's a no-brainer. Absolutely.
Oh, 100%.
The other thing is, on my mental health, for those that place implants, you take an x-ray and you look at the x-ray afterwards and you go, it's a little distal, right? Okay, my next patient is here. Do I take it out, use the Lindemann burr, move it over? Then I may not have primary stability. I may have to pack bone in there. I'll just leave it. And then you think about that case forever. And when you restore it, you may have a food trap. You may lose bone on that. Had you just done it right the first time, you completely limit your liability. You reduce your decision fatigue. You leave going, yep, that's exactly how I planned it. And I feel pretty darn good about myself. You reduce complications. Reputation is great because, I mean, let's be honest, if you're doing guided surgery on a single implant, it's 20 minutes of surgical time. Now you may anesthesia, let the patient sit a little bit, take your time, but it's 20 minutes. I mean, it's three to four drills and placing an implant, putting a healing abutment on, unless you're doing a provisional. That is a huge cost savings.
And I, you know, not that they're a sponsor of ours, but, you know, if you're using the STI system, the single tooth anesthesia, single tooth anesthesia, where you get profound anesthesia in mere moments versus sitting there waiting for 15 minutes, then all of a sudden over time, it's just increased your bottom line dramatically. Patients don't have the discomfort with the injection and on and on and on. So I'm just using that as an example of, you know, the power of planning and compound time. And the same argument goes, like we talked about with the referral relationship thing, about doing the math relative to specialty procedures. If you're doing molar endo because you think you need to increase your production and it takes you 2 hours to do it, I got news for you. From a mathematical perspective, you actually might be more productive sitting there doing nothing than the amount of chair time you're losing trying to do these procedures that you're just not that efficient at. It's just math, honestly. Yeah,
to combat that a little bit, I would say, now, if you really are planning on doing it and know that you're going to increase your speed over time,
sure,
that's fine. But don't think going into it at the beginning, you're going to make money and you're going to be doing this, right? You have to be efficient at things. And if you can get to the level of the specialist or close to the level of the specialist, then it makes total sense, right?
Yeah.
So let's wind this down for today. Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about how good partnership and communication mm-hmm. with your laboratory technician can reduce stress for you, your practice, and your patient. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What other final thoughts do you have to bring us out?
I would say, look at this from a clinical and detailed perspective. Think about how you can sit down with your technician and say, look, I want to broker a new and different type of relationship with you. It's got to be open, honest, and transparent. And I want us to go from a data-driven perspective. I want us to meet once a quarter, twice a year, whatever. I want to talk about what's working, what's not working. I want to talk about specific cases that went well and why, specific cases that didn't go well and why. And then I want to talk and just pick your brain about all of the knowledge that you have from the people that utilize your services to help me help you help our collective patients. Like it's a very detailed data-driven discussion that you can have that can really change the face of your practice.
Yeah. And I love that you came into that, you know, role-playing this as the general dentist, let's say, or not even general dentist, but restorative doctor, let's say. Mm-hmm. And you brought your ego down. Like I'm here to learn. I'm here to get better because I'll tell you, from a lab standpoint, you and I have talked to a lot of dentists, thousands of dentists, that when I call a dentist mm-hmm. and he or she says, hey, doc, I'm just here to make this better. Let me know, you know, what I can do. I mean, they're the best, right?
Yeah.
And guess what? They improve and their remakes go down because they're open to improving and they're not coming here saying, well, oh my gosh, the margin was terrible on that. If they call and say, hey, you know, that margin was open on that last one. Tell me, was it something with the scan? Was the scan okay? Mm-hmm. Was there something mm-hmm. I could do better? Let me know. And sometimes I'm like, you know what? We screwed up. Sorry about that. I'm going to make this better. But those doctors are such a joy to talk to because it's very much learning on both sides.
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, from the GP talking to a laboratory technician for the first time in this way, if they're not amenable to it, maybe they're not the kind of technician you should be working with. And and it goes the other way too, particularly, and this is why I wanted to say this from the technician side, you know, we dentists, some of us can be challenging to work with. That's true in any profession. And so as a coach, I'm going to look at any of you and say with love, look, you don't have to be all things to all people. And the majority of the people you work with are great people that want to learn, that want to grow. And there's going to be a minority that are going to be difficult to deal with and don't want to grow. And so please don't guide your initiatives based upon the minority versus the majority that actually want to learn. I say this to specialists all the time, engage with the general dentists that want to grow and be better and just do what you can for the others that don't. And don't let the negative Nellies guide the totality of your referral-based practice. So same idea.
Yeah. Well, I think this was a fun episode, mm-hmm. a little more clinical than our traditional episodes, but ultimately going back to that patient practice and practitioner wellness that we're all searching for. And Martin and I are very passionate about. So if you haven't written us a written review, please go do that. We would love to see if you like this or even if you don't like it. I mean, we'd like to hear feedback from you. You know, maybe we wouldn't like it if you write a written review that's bad, but we would still like to have reviews from you. We want to know the real feeling, what you have, what you'd like to hear from us. And we are just so honored to be able to share this this message with you. And lastly, if you haven't signed up for Lightside Live, go to wellnessanddentistry.com and sign up. Come hang out with us. I've said it before and I'll say it again. We're super fun
to
hang out with for 2 days. And you get CE credits. You get 12 CE credits. Come on, you guys all need CE credits. Why not do it in a way that will grow yourself as a person, grow your career, and get CE credits at the same time? So go to wellnessanddentistry.com. We thank you for listening and we'll see you on the next episode.
Take care.